I just still to this day cannot believe what I see happening in our nation's capital, not just by the Department of Justice, the top officials, what the line prosecutors, how they conduct themselves in these courtrooms, the filings that they put together, the accusations that they make, the gratification that they get in inflicting pain on individuals who have no criminal record, who have no resources, who after being charged with even misdemeanors for January 6th have their complete lives destroyed. And then they want to come in and pour salt into the wound of these people. And they are gratified by it. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that away.
All right, welcome back, Financial Guys Podcast. You're on the Financial Guys Media Network. Mike Spiraza in studio today. I'm very honored to have Julie Kelly with us. She's been on every single conservative TV station you can name. She does a lot of good journalism, which we don't have very much anymore, Julie. We'll get into that in a little bit, but investigative journalist Julie Kelly joining us. Thank you for joining us.
Mike, thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it. Look forward to our discussion here.
We're going to get to one of the biggest things that I've seen you talk about, which is January 6th in a little bit. But I do want to start with the big news of the week. This is not what I intended on talking about until it happened 2 days ago. But Donald Trump indicted for a fourth time, Julie. It doesn't even feel like, I hate to say it like this, but it's like another day, right? I mean, it doesn't even feel like big breaking news anymore. It just feels like another day here in the United States of America.
Right. It's just becoming a spectacle. And I think actually the Fannie Willis indictment and her statement, close to midnight on Monday, discussing this indictment is starting to show people just what a farce all of these indictments are. I mean, you've got Fannie Willis now charging the former president with racketeering, and these are state racketeering charges. Georgia has a much broader version of the federal statute. And then, you know, ensnaring 18 of his associates, including some of his closest advisors like Rudy Giuliani, former chief of staff Mark Meadows. You know, these are all like the top villains of the media and the Democratic Party. So this lengthy indictment, 161, what she calls overt acts to prove this racketeering conspiracy, and so many of them are just ridiculous, absurd on their face, but it doesn't matter because this is happening in a county, you know, 75% Democrats, and it's just one more unfortunate political legal battle that the president has to confront now.
Here's the part that drives me nuts, though, watching the whole charade of it, right? I mean, I said this on our podcast, I'll say it again, but we knew this was coming, right? I mean, she has been telling us that it's coming and foreshadowing this and the whole charade and show, and I've been calling it the Hollywood show that it is. She told us that there were going to be, you know, the mugshots and the fingerprinting and all that. And then when she gets in front of the press the other night, like you said, at 11:45 Eastern time, you know, it just boils your blood, though, when you see it, because you can tell it's an attention seeking. It's a political gain for her. She's not doing the right thing. She knows it, but she wants to be the center of attention. Very similar, by the way, to the first indictment with Alvin Bragg, which is in my home state.
That's right. And keep in mind, Fannie Willis was elected at the end of 2020. She was sworn into office in January of 21. She opened the investigation into Donald Trump the next month, February of 2021. So this is what she has been fixated on for now 2.5 years, bringing this 91-page indictment, 41 counts of silliness, Mike. I mean, if you look through the overt acts, and I just did a quick, and there's an article on my Substack, Declassified with Julie Kelly, that talks about the silliness of this indictment. But if you look through the 161 overt acts, half of them have nothing to do with Georgia. They're talking about phone calls related to Pennsylvania or meetings related to Arizona or Michigan. I mean, half of these don't even deal with Georgia. So how she, as a local county DA, can bring what is basically a multi-state indictment against people who did nothing in her own jurisdiction. We'll see how that holds up. But to your point, it's all theater. It does not matter. And she really made quite the splash the other day. The big question, though, Mike, is what Jack Smith, the special counsel, does next. He does not want to be overshadowed by Fannie Willis. Now he has, you know, this four-count federal indictment, kind of paltry-looking obstruction and a couple of conspiracy counts. But it's nothing compared to what Fannie Willis produced. So Donald Trump is certainly not out of the woods in the federal case either.
So I was going to ask you that because I'm trying to pull up your tweet now as we're saying this, because you had talked about this exact thing with Jack Smith. Let me just pull this up here. It was from yesterday, I believe. Yes. I've always argued that Jack Smith will bring a superseding indictment against Trump for January 6th, but now his back is against the wall after local DA just swooped up Trump and his most hated allies on racketeering charges. What will Smith do next? That was your tweet yesterday. I guess my question is, do you think we're done with this? Or do you think that, I mean, and forget just Jack Smith and Fannie Willis for a second. Are we going to see one in Pennsylvania or Michigan or another New York? Or, I mean, how many indictments are we going to see between now and, let's call it, October, November of 2024?
Right. So we already know that Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel has indicted several people, some of them senior citizens, on this fake elector scheme, which is also part of Fannie Willis's indictment and Jack Smith's as well. And these were people who got together, you know, wrote up a certificate that they were going to be alternative electors if something happened, you know, if Mike Pence didn't certify the electors on January 6th. It's been done routinely. But Dana Nessel is now prosecuting her own constituents for that. So could she now, if she's looking at what Fannie Willis is getting away with, and could she do the same thing and rope those and create the same sort of, not racketeering, but certainly a conspiracy case against Donald Trump working with these Michigan fake electors? Possibly. I also believe that the Attorney General for Arizona is looking into what happened in that state and Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani's efforts there. So to your point, you know, this may not be it. We've got four indictments right now pending against Donald Trump, Alvin Bragg, Jack Smith, two cases, the classified documents case, which is in Southern Florida, and of course, January 6th election case in Washington, D.C., and now, of course, Fannie Willis. So, you know, federal prosecutors, especially attorney generals, they're extremely politically ambitious people. So Dana Nessel, who is figuring Gretchen Whitmer might go somewhere, land on some ticket somewhere, if something happens with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, you know, she's going to want to step into the wings there. This is a great way for her to continue to get publicity for herself. So that's certainly a possibility.
Let's talk about these trials for a second, too, because I'm sure you know a lot more about this than I do. But there, Fannie Willis said she's going to maybe try them all together. You know, obviously, there's four separate indictments that Donald Trump's going to have to go through, you know, in different states, or one federally or two federally, whatever it may be. But how do these trials actually happen before 2024? I know they're going to try and push that. I'm asking legally. I mean, I know it from our state. If somebody admits to a rape or a murder in New York, it still doesn't take less than a year. They're admitting to it. We know it, right? And they still can't get the trial done. And I'm not laughing about those charges. I'm laughing about if you admit to a violent crime like that, murder or rape, we can't get that done in less than 2 years, it feels like. How are they going to push all this before November of 2024?
Look, they know that they can't, right? Especially in Washington, D.C. Jack Smith, this is, as I said, if he supersedes this indictment, look, he really still has to charge the six co-conspirators who were listed in his original indictment against Donald Trump. And five out of six of those are now in Fannie Willis's indictment. And that would be Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, John Eastman, Ken Cheeseborough, and I forget Jeffrey Clark, the acting assistant deputy attorney general at the time. So he's still going to have to indict them. The question is, do you leave that as a separate indictment, or eventually that becomes the superseding indictment? He adds then all of them as co-conspirators, co-defendants, and say a seditious conspiracy charge, which, you know, DOJ has brought seditious conspiracy charges against more than 20 J6ers. You've got at least 10 who have been convicted or pleaded guilty. I believe that that's the big kahuna for Jack Smith, for the J6 case against Donald Trump. So that will continue to push out a trial date. This idea that Jack Smith said he wants to start jury selection in this case in Washington, D.C. in December and start the trial in early January of 2024 is a farce. He knows that that's not true. He knows that it's not possible. They have turned over at least 11 million pages of discovery to Donald Trump in the J6 case alone. So he's misleading people, Jack Smith, and we know that that's what he does. So there's no way that that case will go to trial anytime soon. Fannie Willis, her suggestion that all 19 of these defendants, the former president of the United States, along with a former chief of staff, you see that Mark Meadows has already moved to sever himself from that because he was a federal employee at the time. So he's already moved to sever that she could conduct a 19 defendant trial in Fulton County before the election, as she said, the next 6 months. No. These prosecutors are all misleading the public. They know that it's impossible, especially given the voluminous amount of discovery, Brady material that they are going to have to turn over. So I don't see any of these trials, any of these cases going to trial before the November election, no matter how much they say it. What they want to do, Mike, is make it look like Donald Trump is the one who wants to delay these trials until after the election. And we saw that play out in the classified documents case, which then Jack Smith came and superseded that indictment, moving, again, the speedy trial clock back essentially to zero, which will push the trial date probably out even further than May of 2024.
Before I get into the fact that that's actually election interference, right? I mean, this is what the left is actually doing. They're trying to interfere with the 2024 election. Mm-hmm. Let me ask, because I do get confused sometimes. I know probably a lot of our listeners do, too. What are the actual crimes they're saying he committed here on all of these charges? Because from the last two, Jack Smith and Fannie Willis, it seems like you can't actually have your own thoughts anymore. That, and again, I know that's a talking point right now, but when you read some of these things, I think, was it Mark Meadows, made a phone call to see if attorneys could give advice on a, you know, like, what are we talking about here? Are these actual crimes, or are they literally thought crimes that the government and the media is making it seem like Donald Trump was going to kill people if he didn't get put back into office?
Right. So really, Mike, as I've said, this is not about the 2020 election. This is about the 2024 election. What the federal government and local prosecutors are doing, especially in swing states like Georgia, is criminalizing any objection to the outcome of an election. Now, it was okay when Stacey Abrams did it in Georgia. I think she still denied the outcome of her losing gubernatorial race. But nonetheless, when the Democrats, especially in these states, in these Democrat-run counties, attempt to do the same thing in 2024, you know, no chain of custody, ballot harvesting, loose or no signature verification, counting absentee ballots before the legislative deadline as to when to begin, for example, what happened in Pennsylvania. What this sends a message, Mike, is if you protest, if you attempt to uncover or investigate election voter fraud, if you raise money to try to pay for lawsuits, if you file a lawsuit, you will be considered a criminal who attempted to subvert the outcome of a national election. That's what they're setting up, and that's what these bogus charges are about. To your point, when Fannie Willis uses a phone call that Chief of Staff Mark Meadows made to Pennsylvania Representative Scott Perry, asking for the Pennsylvania Republican Party's chairman's phone number, that's evidence of a crime? I mean, this is how just off the chain all of this is. Absurd, outlandish this is. But especially in these heavily Democratic jurisdictions, Fulton County, New York City, and especially Washington, D.C., these prosecutors know their burden of proof is basically zero. You have a grand jury made up of the same voters, Democrat voters, who make up a trial jury. They're going to sign off on whatever indictments that the prosecutors put in front of them. And then you're going to have biased judges. We certainly have that in the case of Judge Tanya Chutkan, who's overseeing Trump's January 6th case. And they just basically act like a rubber stamp. So this is really the sort of banana republic style climate that Donald Trump finds himself in three out of the four jurisdictions. Certainly, Judge Aileen Cannon in Florida has a far different approach in the classified documents case than these other judges do. But this is about the 2024 election, not 2020.
Yeah, it's pretty concerning. I mean, you go back to the Mar-a-Lago raid and how ridiculous that was, right? Going through, you know, Barron's underwear drawer. I mean, these people are sick. They're messed up. Yeah. And it's sad because here's my other question. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, right? I mean, if you're a Republican, an independent, a Democrat, whatever you are, is this really what you want? Because it's going to flip at some point, right? At some point. Unless we go into like a full dictatorship, but it's going to flip at some point, right? Republicans will gain control again. Is this what we want to do back and forth every time the presidency changes, going back and indicting and going after every president? Again, if there's actual crimes, they're fine, but we can't just make things up just to make sure the opposition leader cannot get back into office because Donald Trump is up 50 points. I think today it was 47 points. The primary's over. It's been over for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. And what DOJ is doing now, I wish that I could believe, Mike, that if Republicans get back the White House and have control, that they'll actually wield this power the way that the Democrats do. Donald Trump had his shot to do that when he was president, and he unfortunately squandered a lot of opportunities. Now, he was already under fire with special counsel Robert Mueller's bogus investigation into Russia election collusion. But there were a lot of missed opportunities there. Has Donald Trump learned his lesson? I hope so. But I have no trust in the other Republican candidates that they will be able to deal with this monster, this malignancy that is really killing our country. And it all permeates out of Washington, D.C. So that's the real question. But if you talk about weaponization of the law, this is not rule of law. You know, we hear the left say this. It's rule of law. No one is above the law. Well, when you take obstruction of an official proceeding, this 1512 C2, that's the most common felony slapped against more than 300 January 6th defendants. This is one of the counts in Jack Smith's indictment. That's a post-Enron law. That has to deal with tampering with evidence and witnesses. It is a felony punishable by up to 20 years in jail. It has nothing to do with disrupting a meeting of Congress in Washington, D.C., which American citizens, they don't do it violently, certainly have the right to do that. And Mike, we've seen this historically, especially in the past several years, the disruption of the 2017 inauguration, which turned into really destructive riots in Washington, D.C., the 2018 confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. We saw this during the Code Pink era. Yeah. That's not a crime, but DOJ has successfully weaponized that statute to turn it into a crime of political protest. And this is now case law that exists. Will Republicans do the same if they have power? I have very little confidence, but one can hope, I guess.
Well, yeah, that's a lot better than I would have said, because we've seen it, right? We've seen what's happened to Donald Trump, and all we see from Republican politicians is this and then tweeting, right? They're pounding the podium and tweeting
writing
and doing
letters.
Actually nothing.
Right. Writing
yeah,
letters.
Right. And doing actually nothing. It's mind-boggling. Let me ask you one thing before we go into January 6th, and it kind of ties into January 6th, I guess. You mentioned before, you know, Trump had the opportunity to do some things, and he didn't. And I agree with you, right? I would have fired Tony Fauci the minute I realized that he was a snake and a rat, right?
Right.
But we can look back and say those things now, obviously seeing what has happened. I guess my one thing that I'll give Trump, and I'm saying this because I'm 31 years old. I've been involved with political things now for 5 years, let's call it.
Okay.
If you would have told me 10 years ago some of these things would have happened, Julie, I would have never believed it, right? Mm-hmm. What they did with January 6th and turned that into Trump started an insurrection, right? When you talk about shutting down the whole country for a flu, I mean, these are things that I would have never believed. And I don't know that I believe the government was as corrupt as it was until seeing what the last 6 years have been. That's the only thing I'm going to give Donald Trump credit for there. Like, I don't know that he thought the deep state was as deep and as crazy as it truly is.
Right. I mean, you definitely have a point there. I don't think he or anyone around him really grasped the depravity of what was happening in Washington, D.C. with the national security apparatus. You know, he was very, I think he understood what he was dealing with Jim Comey, but the fact that you sat down and had private dinners with him and then turns out that Jim Comey was taking notes on that. I mean, Jim Comey should have been fired at 12:01 on January 20th, yep. 2017, but he wasn't. And then you sort of let people. So, look, there's a long list of people that Trump not only kept on board, but entrusted, people he knew or instinctively knew he could not trust, but for one reason or the other wouldn't pull the trigger. Now, look, I was against it. We can get into the lockdowns, but I was against that from the very beginning. I was calling for Fauci's for Trump to fire and dismantle the coronavirus task force as early April of 2020, because you could see what was happening there. But for example, when he told Attorney General William Barr he wanted to fire Christopher Wray, Bill Barr threatened that he would resign as well, that he would. Now, unfortunately for the country and Donald Trump, he didn't take up Bill Barr on that offer and say, great, you're fired, and so is Christopher Wray. But this was a fraught time. It was early. It was the spring of 2020, the lockdowns, and then, of course, what happened with the BLM riots, where also Bill Barr confronted the president and didn't want to go along with his plan. So has he learned those lessons? I certainly hope so, that he will put, if he's reelected, put much better people in charge, people that he can trust. And as soon as those people not just work against him, but the best interests of the country, transparency, justice, et cetera, that he will immediately get rid of them. So that's the big, I think, still big open question about a potential second Trump presidency. That being said, again, I don't have a lot of faith in the other Republican candidates that they would be able to do it as much as Donald Trump probably would.
Yeah, I never will be a big retribution guy. However, I'm at that point.
Well, you're young.
I would love to see,
that's me a good in 25 point. Years.
I've always said, yeah. Well, I've always said, like, you know, not the Republican let's play nice in the sandbox type of thing, but like, look, you don't want to make enemies all over the country. But now I'm kind of like, you know what? He tried that. He tried to play nice with the Faucis right. of the world. It didn't work. So just blow it up. And to be honest with you, the Fannie Willis of the world, the Alvin Braggs of the world, he needs to work with whoever we need to get to, governors or whatever, get these people out of there because they're ruining our country day by day. Let's talk January 6th real quick. I know we don't have, 7 days to talk about this, and I know you've done a lot of research on this. I want to start with, first off, can you tell our listeners at the 30,000-foot view how much you've learned and what you've learned talking and studying this over the last few years?
Well, I'll just pick up on what you said. As a young man, 31, in some political experience, never really believing that you would see what you're seeing our political establishment do in Washington, D.C. And I'll tell you, as someone who's almost 55 years old, who, you know, I've been working in politics on and off for most of my adult life, career, and outside of Chicago, by the way, you know, I'm not in, you know, Podunk, wherever. This is a very political state and political city, so I see a lot. I just still, to this day, cannot believe what I see happening in our nation's capital. Not just by the Department of Justice, the top officials, what the line prosecutors, how they conduct themselves in these courtrooms, the filings that they put together, the accusations that they make, the gratification that they get in inflicting pain on individuals who have no criminal record, who have no resources, who, after being charged with even misdemeanors for January 6th, have their complete lives destroyed. And then they want to come in and pour salt into the wound of these people. And they are gratified by it. Aside from the prosecutors, the real villain here, Mike, villains are the judges on the D.C. District Court. And this goes from everyone from Obama judges to Trump judges, who are some of the worst, believe it or not. Even Reagan-appointed judges who should have been forced to retire a long time ago. But the way
can you dive into that when you say that? Sorry, Joe, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Okay. Can you dive into what you mean by some of the Trump-appointed judges? Because this is stuff that I don't know, and I'd love to hear real quick.
So one of the worst judges on the D.C. District Court is a man named Timothy Kelly, and he was appointed by Donald Trump. He is a former staffer, Republican Senate staffer, and was also a prosecutor out of the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, which is the office that's prosecuting and handling every January 6th case. And I watched him in action in the Proud Boys case. This is a man who kept nonviolent offenders behind bars for more than almost two years while allowing DOJ to conceal evidence, to delay their trials, keep innocent men, veterans, by the way, men with no criminal record, behind bars, refusing to release them simply because they were a member of the Proud Boys and they were involved in the events of January 6th. These aren't men who were charged with assaulting police officers, bringing weapons to the Capitol, even vandalizing anything. They were also charged with bogus charges like obstruction and conspiracy, but Judge Tim Kelly repeatedly refused to release those men, even to something like home confinement or home detention, kept them, a few of them in this rotted D.C. gulag set aside just for January 6th defendants. Furthermore, Mike, he repeatedly denied change of venue motions for this high-profile Proud Boys, then it turned into a seditious conspiracy trial. He refused to move the trial out of Washington, D.C., even though the January 6th committee at the same time was holding nighttime televised hearings blaming the Proud Boys for what happened on January 6th. Then they release a report that mentions the Proud Boys over 100 times, including these specific defendants. They release that report the end of December while jury selection is underway in Washington, D.C. And a judge who is sworn to protect the rights of a defendant, who should challenge everything that the DOJ and government puts before him, instead wasn't just a rubber stamp. He acted as like another prosecutor for the DOJ. And then when the trial was underway, he acted like he was an alternate juror. It was really shameful to see, especially from someone who's supposed to be a conservative. I don't care if he was appointed by Trump or he's a Republican. You have an oath of office to protect the rights of defendants, presumption of innocence, due process, make sure all the evidence is turned over. He did none of that. So if I had to pick one of the worst judges on the D.C. District, it would be Tim Kelly. He's right up there with someone like Tanya Chutkin and Chief Judge Beryl Howell. So when I say the real villains in all of this are the D.C. judges, that's an example of why that's the case.
You had talked about on Twitter somebody by the name of Michael Jones. I talk about Ray Epps all the time on Twitter. You know, these people that were caught on camera, like some of the others that are rotting in jail right now, they were caught on camera doing things, whether that be saying run into the Capitol, whether that be moving barriers, whether that be breaking into the Capitol, whatever it may be. You know, I've been always one to say, Julie, personally, I wouldn't have been caught dead there that day just because I don't trust anybody anymore. And the last thing I'd be doing is going there that day knowing that there were some inside people. I mean, some of us said that. I will say we said that from the beginning. I remember telling my wife at home, like, this is not going to end well. There's going to be something that happens. And of course, it didn't end well. But these people like Ray Epps and Michael Jones and others that are, you know, maybe informants, maybe not, you know, why are they? And Ray Epps told us, by the way, I said this earlier on Twitter. Ray Epps told us, by the way, he was going to be arrested and indicted very soon earlier this summer.
That's right.
I haven't seen that yet. I haven't heard that yet. Why are they getting away with this? I know the answer, of course, is probably because it's a weaponized investigation. But how are they getting away with this? And where are the Republicans to say, wait a minute, where are these people?
So where are the Republicans? I don't know. Something I've been asking since the spring of 2021 when I saw all of these people being arrested, charged with these bogus charges and denied release by D.C. judges. They've been nowhere to be found, most of them, nothing from Republicans in the Senate, the most worthless group of politicians probably in American political history. So where have they been? But back to your point about Ray Epps, yes, he did say in his defamation lawsuit he filed against Fox in June, the DOJ told him in May he was going to be charged for January 6th. Well, here we are, what, 3 months later, Ray Epps is still a free man. No one is asking questions as to why he hasn't been charged. I'm curious to see what the charges are because, Mike, if you look at Ray Epps' conduct, not just on January 5th, where he's there at BLM Plaza and he's getting people riled up and telling them to go in the Capitol and people start yelling, Fed. The next day, he committed several crimes that other people have been charged and convicted of. Mm-hmm. He was at the very first breach point where he helped overrun the metal racks on the exterior west side of the grounds. He was there with Ryan Samsel, who has been rotting in jail for 2.5 years awaiting trial for his role in the breach. But Ray Epps whispered in Ryan Samsel's ear right before Ryan Samsel had the confrontation with police and tore away one of the metal racks. Ray Epps was at restricted grounds, walking around restricted grounds for at least an hour and a half. He hasn't even been charged with that. You have men who were on that west side grounds who never went in the building who have been charged and convicted of obstruction of an official proceeding. If anyone should be charged with obstruction of an official proceeding, it should be Ray Epps, because when he was involved in that first breach and when he was on the west side of the terrace, the joint session of Congress was underway. Some people have been charged with obstruction who went into the building after Congress had been evacuated and the joint session suspended. But that was not the case with Ray Epps. So why is he not facing any of these serious charges, but so many others who engaged in similar conduct or far less conduct than what he did? Why is he still a free man? To your point, Michael Jones, that's the story I have up from last week. Another FBI underforeman embedded in the Proud Boys, identified on body-worn camera footage and surveillance video, committing multiple crimes outside and inside the building. He, too, has never been charged with his involvement in January 6th. Just another confirmation of another FBI asset, informant. And this is why, Mike, the one whistleblower, FBI whistleblower from the Boston FBI field office said when they were trying to get the videotapes related to January 6th, because the FBI is pushing all this investigation, and George Hill said, okay, well, we need the surveillance video, and Maine FBI, the Washington field office, said, no, we can't give it to you because it will reveal the identity and movements of FBI under assets, including informants. So this is why they're trying to keep all of this video under seal. They've been successful so far. A few journalists like myself have been given access. But look, they really need to release all of this video to the American people so they can start digging in as well. Because there's still a lot more questions that we don't have answers to as to the involvement of informants and undercover assets for numerous agencies, including the Department of Defense.
Well, the DOJ is too busy working on the Trump case. That's why they can't figure out Ray Epps. That's probably part of the problem. They're too concerned about Trump at this point. But I will say too, Adam Kinzinger is one of my arch nemesis on Twitter. We don't like each other very much at this point. he is. I think he did a really bad thing, and the whole January 6th committee did, I believe. And then we'll do this last part, but then I want to get your thoughts on the Republican primary. I don't want to forget about that. But the Adam Kinzingers, the Adam Schiffs, and that whole panel of January 6th people, I'll call them, what bothers me the most, Julie, is they purposely withheld things. And they can tell you, oh, it's all on this website or it's all over there. They're full of bull. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the Ray Epps footage, it's footage. We all have it. We've all seen it, right? It's on Twitter right now if you want to go get it. I want one simple response from that January 6th committee. One simple response. Why did he not get arrested or indicted or convicted yet when these other people have? That's the only question. They won't answer that, right? They'll say, well, we did an investigation. That's not good enough. Why is he, and now you can mention Michael Jones, why are these two not being indicted and prosecuted? That's the only question. I want to know that thing before I talk anything further about January 6th.
Well, it's funny because when people started raising the issue of Ray Epps, Darren Beatty at Revolver News, and then, of course, Tucker, the people like Adam Kinzinger, the January 6th committee, and even corporate news reporters who consider anyone involved, even a minuscule nonviolent participation in January 6th, considers them an insurrectionist or a domestic terrorist or a traitor or whatever. But then they immediately came to Ray Epps' defense. That made no sense. And again, I'll tell you, Mike, almost every time I look at footage, whether it was the Michael Jones footage, there's Ray Epps. I looked at footage that was released at the last minute in the Proud Boys trial with Zach, one of the defendants there. There's Ray Epps. Like, he's all over the place. So at the bare minimum, why isn't he charged with being on restricted grounds or disorderly conduct or, you know, as I said, even that obstruction felony? He said he was going to be charged. He in May, and here we are not, he's not charged. But again, how many, we just know of a few of these now, provocateurs, potential government assets. We also know the involvement of undercover D.C. Metro police who have been caught on body-worn camera footage cheering like Trump supporters. They're in plain clothes. They're encouraging people to go up to that West Side inaugural scaffolding. We still have no explanation as to how many undercover D.C. Metro agents were involved. So this was heavily, heavily populated by undercover law enforcement agents. We know that there were Secret Service agents who were there in plain clothes. We know that there were Capitol Police in plain clothes. We know that there were Park Police in plain clothes. What were they doing, though? And if they saw this unfolding, you're still an officer. You weren't calling for more troops, for more assets, for more police officers. We know that the National Guard was intentionally delayed for hours. So this is why the American people have so many questions and why Adam Kinzinger, you know, he'll never answer any of those questions, certainly related to Ray Epps. But also, we now know that there is evidence that's missing that the GA6 committee produced. They buried in an appendix the scrutiny of security, law enforcement, and intelligence agencies. And there are still several witness transcripts missing, not the least of which is Bobby Engel, who was driving the Secret Service, the vehicle for Donald Trump, and took him to the White House instead of the Capitol. And Cassidy Hutchinson, as you'll recall, claimed that Donald Trump tried to strangle him. That transcript, that interview, still buried by the J6 committee.
Donald Trump's 45-foot arms in the very back.
That's
right. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. What's sad, too, I mean, people forget, too, Nancy Pelosi had a camera crew that day. Why would you have a camera crew on yourself all day long if you didn't think something was going to happen? I mean, the whole thing, it's just dirty all the way across. I don't like it. My last question on this, and then if you have 2 minutes, I do want to get your thoughts on the primary, but the January 6th committee, the DAs, the corrupt DAs, and the weaponized government, can Donald Trump or any of these January 6ers potentially sue these people for making fraudulent claims or withholding evidence or, you know, being falsely tried and convicted of things? Is there any way that these people can go after the government or the Department of Justice or whoever?
I think so. I mean, clearly this is a selective prosecution. We know that this Department of Justice, at the same time they're rounding out, you know, people for trespassing at the Capitol, going inside for 10 minutes, have completely memory holed the destructive violence in Washington, D.C. in the summer of 2020, which included attacking federal police officers, included vandalizing federal property, and trying to scale the fences of the White House, attempting to get inside the White House, prompting the lockdown of Donald Trump and his family that weekend. I believe it was a Memorial Day weekend. Not only have cases been dropped, Mike, the same D.C. U.S. attorney who's rounding up trespassers helped negotiate a settlement between BLM protesters from Washington, D.C., who were suing federal police for excessive force that was used against them as they were trying to, you know, invade the White House. So the double standard is obvious. So I do think that these defendants would at the very least have a case for selective prosecution based on politics and, you know, the fact that they protested Joe Biden's election. I don't know if any of them are going to pursue that. There are certainly appeals pending and now two Supreme Court petitions that are pending on that obstruction count. So there's a lot of different mechanisms. But, Mike, for the most part, I think a lot of these defendants, their lives have been destroyed. If they're convicted or they take a plea deal, they just want to serve it out and be done with it. So, unfortunately, I think that there are cases there, but I don't know that these January 6th defendants have the stomach or certainly the resources to move forward with something like that.
Yeah, I think that's the most sickening part, right? I mean, their jobs, their careers, everything. Now, certain ones that did certain things that day, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be convicted if you did something you shouldn't have, but some of these people, you know, being at the wrong place at the wrong time and standing somewhere or videotaping something, they've been arrested, their lives have been ruined. Short of them, like, getting involved at a conservative media outlet, it's over, right? I mean, they can't get a normal job again or live a normal life again. It's sickening.
Right.
Real quickly, before we plug some of the stuff you're doing, Julie, your thoughts on the 2024 primary, the Republican primary, that is. I mean, DeSantis is in a free fall. Vivek Ramaswamy's doing a nice job gaining some numbers, but it's a 40-50, and I'm going to say by the next week or the following week, a 60-point lead probably for Donald Trump. This thing's over, right?
I mean, it looks like it. I live in suburban Chicago. We have a place in Florida. I'm a big fan of Ron DeSantis and a lot of what he's done as governor. I did not think he was ready to run, and I find it really unfortunate that he did. And he has proven himself not to be a good candidate. I mean, if you watch what happened in Iowa, he just really lacks the interpersonal skills, the warmth, the humor, the self-deprecating kind of way he presents himself as someone who really doesn't want to interact with people. You know, for a while he's saying how do you pronounce my last name? It's Winner. That just rubs Republican voters the wrong way. And yes, he has a good record of success in Florida. Some of it he's responsible for. Some of it he's not. Florida's always been a no-tax state, which is why people from my state go down there and get residency. So that's been an unfortunate thing to see. Vivek is fine. You know, I think he's saying a lot of the right things, but definitely not a proven track record. And the other candidates in this political climate in the Republican Party are just non-starters. So, yes, I think Donald Trump continues to grow his lead. And regardless of these indictments and the lawfare that he's under right now, I think it's clear that he still has the majority support of Republican voters as to be the 2024 Republican nominee.
Yeah, speaking back to my boy Adam Kinzinger, he is now pushing Chris Christie, which is an interesting choice. The guy that literally is, yeah, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. I think a lot of these guys are petitioning for their CNN jobs or their MSNBC jobs or their Fox News jobs, whatever it may be. They're petitioning for that. It's not really a serious campaign, which is sad. I didn't think DeSantis, I thought DeSantis would not beat Trump, but I didn't think it would be a free fall. I mean, he was polling at 8% today. That is not good.
No.
Julie, thank you for joining us. But first, before we let you go, how do people find you? I know you said the Substack station or the Substack. I'm not a good Substack guy. So how do people find you there? Twitter, Instagram, you name it, all over the place. How do people find you?
Right. So thanks so much. So my Substack is called Declassified with Julie Kelly. You can get all my breaking news and commentary analysis right to your inbox. I'm on Twitter a lot, Julie_Kelly2, where I post breaking news such as court motions. I've got some news up there currently about the appeals and the Whitmer Fednapping hoax, which is another story that I cover. So I'm pretty active on Twitter. So those are the two places that people can find me.
Keep fighting the good fight. Keep giving us good information. Like I said, we don't have a lot of reputable journalists anymore in this country, which is a sad thing. You know, you can't trust anybody. I've watched you for a long time. I know you were on Tucker for some time there, and it's been great getting good information from you. Thank you again for joining us on the Financial Guys podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Absolutely. Folks, if you need us throughout the week, 833-FIN-GUYS. Don't forget about our Twitter at FinGuys, Instagram at Financial Guys, Facebook at The Financial Guys, this podcast and all of our podcasts on financialguysmedia.com. I will see you next week. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
From the land of the free and the brave. They can't take that away. Against all odds, he made.